If you need mustard for that corned beef you're making, get Colleen's Irish Mustard. Colleen's Irish Mustard unites mustard haters and mustard lovers from around the world. Currently, Colleen's Irish Mustard has 3 flavors in mild, regular, and spicy. For more information on Colleen's Irish Mustard, visit www.irishmustard.com.
We're back!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the 100% Sports Podcast. And alongside me, as always, Nathan Sabo, and it's good to be back.
Yes, sir. It's great to be back. How are you doing today on a lovely 75-degree day in November?
I'm doing pretty good because, you know, it's nice and sunny outside. I mean, cooped up right now because, you know, we're filming a podcast, but I'm going to go outside later today because, you know, last year at this time, it was like a blizzard outside and we had half a foot of snow. But now we got 75-degree weather, so this is really starting to become
2020. Oh, yeah. This whole year has been, it's just been 2020, and that's going to be a saying for a long time because, man, just how weird and every little thing that could go wrong this year or oddball thing to happen, it happened.
Has gone wrong.
Exactly.
Only thing not different in 2020 compared to previous years is how bad the Lions are.
Oh, jeez, man. Don't even get me started. I know we're going to get onto that a little later, but I don't know. It was predicted, I think. I mean, I figured they'd stick around 500, but my God, are they terrible.
They just don't look good. That's the thing. They just don't look good.
Oh, no. They're awful. I mean, you got Mr. Rocket Scientist sitting over there in a tarp or whatever the hell he wears every weekend.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Rocket Scientist, I got to tell you something about that defense.
Oh, God.
A little later that I think he is playing with Rocket Science at this point with the way he's experimenting with his defense. But when we get to the Lions part, I will tell you.
Yeah,
about
you should
that.
Put him up in a rocket and get the hell out of here.
And Bob Quinn, he exactly. Sucks too. All right, let's talk a little bit of college football. And I know a lot of things have gone on in the last few weeks of college football. Of course, you got the Big Ten returning about 3 weeks ago. We got the Pac-12 returning last week. And then your school, Central Michigan, and the MAC came back in some action last Wednesday. And they'll obviously play tomorrow in more action. So that's exciting. And then, of course, we had our first real upset of the college football season, seeing number 1 Clemson go down on the road to number 4 Notre Dame. But the craziest part of Notre Dame Clemson was Trevor Lawrence has COVID, but Trevor Lawrence is on the sideline.
I think it was because he did test negative multiple times after, but the problem is the ACC, they put in a cardiac screening testing, and that takes some time after you test positive to test for it. I guess he couldn't test the cardiac screening in time, so that's why. But, I don't think he had it on the sideline when he was down there. I think he had already tested negative, but don't quote me on that.
Well, that makes a lot more sense, and Clemson seems a little bit smarter than I thought they were about 20 minutes ago. So, because he was touching people, and he had his mask off, and I go, what
and
are
it's
you
like,
doing?
I'm thinking, what are the people watching this game that don't know the rules the ACC has in place? I mean, they're going to think he's nuts, but no, they do have, I believe he tested negative already, and they have to go through a cardiac screening. So, yeah, he did not have COVID on the sideline yesterday or the other day.
And then, of course, you know, we had the Justin Turner incident in the World Series, but he has some leeway. You're celebrating a World
Series.
Yeah,
I understand that. You're celebrating a World Series, but
all I'm going to say is, how do you not have the COVID test before the game?
I don't know. You can get into conspiracies there about that because, all right, you know, it's game 6 of the World Series. The series, you know, the season's almost over. We made it this far. The MLB not want to say anything? Like, what if the Dodgers lost game 6? Would they have said Turner tested positive, or would they have waited till the end of game 7 to say it? You know what I mean?
They would have waited. So they would have definitely. I feel like
there could be something there. But to be honest, it was the end of the year, end of the season. I don't think really anybody cared anymore. Should he have done what he did? Not really. I mean, I understand but going out there and celebrating, but he was hugging and kissing and all that. I mean, like, maybe you should, like, simmer down a little bit. Like, go out there, take your pictures, whatever, but be a little cautious.
And then another thing was, what was with the Rays taking out their pitchers so early?
Don't get me started with that.
I understand if it's like a new strategy and like some new number system that some genius named Matt Patricia came up with. Like, and some mathematician came up with a new strategy on how to win baseball games where you only start your pitchers for 5 innings or something. Like, I saw that happen and I don't recall who the pitcher was in game 6. I'm sure you do. But he was pitching pretty good and then I hear that he gets pulled out, and I go, what are you doing? If it's not broke, don't
fix
it.
This is the part of the game, not just in more in baseball, but really all sports, but it is really more baseball, where the analytical and statistics geek pisses me off. And we're in this new age of baseball where pitch count is monitored to the extreme. The Rays were one of the first teams in the MLB last year to implement an opener, which means you start, instead of starting your regular starting pitcher, you basically have a bullpen pitcher pitch 2 innings and then have another guy pitch 2 innings. And this new analytical rule of, you know, pitch count and this guy against lefties, this guy against righties average, this has gone way too far. And that was a clear example of it. Blake Snell, who was the pitcher, he had 70 pitches when he was taken out of the game. 70. He gave up 2 hits throughout the whole game.
Usually it's 100. And I thought it usually was 100.
Oh,
and then
that's it wasn't about pitch count. It wasn't about that. It was about the analyticals and, you know, bringing in a bullpen guy to face this guy, his average, whatever. But this goes to the point where it's like, all right, it's game 6 of the frickin' World Series. It's an elimination game for the Rays. They have to win. Blake Snell is pitching one of the best games of his career. He pitched a no-hitter through 5 innings, I believe. And they took him out with 70 pitches to go, only giving up 2 hits. I mean, that is your ace starter. He won the Cy Young, I don't know if it was last year, a couple years ago. It's game 6 of the World Series, like I said. And I'm leaving him out there until he doesn't have anything left in that arm, because that is absolutely ridiculous. And then we saw what happened. They go on, they blow it, and the Dodgers win the World Series in 6.
If I'm Blake Snell, I'm coming off the field, and I'm going right into the GM and tell him to terminate my contract.
Okay, that's maybe a little bit extreme.
I mean, dude, you are pitching that well in pretty much the biggest game of your life so far, and you get taken out, and I'm pretty sure he wasn't even tired. Like, he was probably a little bit tired, but he wasn't gassed. He could still go.
And he's not tired. And the biggest aspect they put on it, especially with the broadcasters, John Smoltz was talking about, and it's true, it's more the mental aspect at that point of the game than the physical aspect of being fatigued. But believe me, at 70 pitches, Blake Snell ain't tired. He's a competitor. And he was pissed coming off the field. You saw it. And if anybody knows anything about pitching in World Series, it's John Smoltz. He's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. When you look at him World Series numbers, it's insane. And, it doesn't make any sense. And it hurt them in the end.
Yeah, I thought it was a dumb move. But let's move on. Let's transition from the World Series to more back to college football, where we originally were. And then I brought up Justin Turner, and then, went on a nice little ramble. But with college football, it's in the top 10 rankings for, honestly, I can't even tell you what week we're in anymore, because this is like week 2 for the Pac-12, week 4 for the Big Ten, week 9.
It's insane.
But anyway, this is, like, don't look in too much into the rankings, of course, this year, because not all these teams have played the same amount of games. But the top 4, obviously, you would expect it to be this. Alabama 1. Notre Dame 2, a little bit surprising, but, you know, they just came off the big win against a Trevor Lawrence-less Clemson team and some of their defense, and pretty much their defense was out too with a few players gone. And then OSU coming in at number 3 with only playing 3 games, and they've played 3 cupcakes to start off the year. And then 4, is Clemson, and then you have 5, Texas A&M, and then 6, Florida. Now you're thinking, oh, okay, that's pretty normal, and then it starts getting weird. Number 7, Luke Fickell's Cincinnati Bearcats. To me, that's a little strange. And then 8th, BYU. 9th, the U, Miami. And number 10, Indiana. What? Indiana has never been good in football until this year.
Yeah, and that's obviously a big surprise to a lot of people in Indiana this year. I expected them to be good. I didn't expect them to compete for the Big Ten title, which they are, in fact, in competition for. But, yeah, that's – and then if you go even further down the list of the top 25, I'm just going to point out a couple of oddballs here.
Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina, Marshall, Liberty, who just beat Virginia Tech, and it's like
– yes, that was a crazy ending.
Yeah, crazy ending. But, yeah, the season matters, but it doesn't in the sense of you can't take it completely seriously. It's just, you know, every conference has different rules and teams missing games and players missing games because of COVID and Pac-12 only playing 6 games and they already canceled some of their games. So, I mean, enjoy the season. Don't get me wrong, you know, but at the same time.
Love college football.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, Michigan State beating Michigan. Yeah, it felt good, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest.
I knew you were going to pull that out. You're going to bring it up at least.
Of course,
once.
I'm going to bring it up because Harbaugh blew that game. But either way, you know, it felt good as an MSU fan. But let's be honest. On a regular year, I would be absolutely like through the roof. But this year, it's like, okay, great. I mean, I don't know. I just play the game, enjoy it, but I can't take it too seriously, I guess.
Yeah, and if you look at the Big Ten standings, you got Northwestern at the top of the West, but of course, Wisconsin's only played one game, and then at the top of the East, you have Indiana, Ohio State, and then at the bottom, you have an 0-3 Penn State team.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
wow.
That's where it's like, okay, obviously, COVID or not, Ohio State's going to be good. I think Indiana would have surprised some people, regardless of COVID, maybe not to the extent they have so far.
Yes, no way. I would have expected to see them. Even last year, they were pretty solid. I think they
I expected them to maybe pull an upset or two. But then you look at the West, and it's like, all right, that's where COVID affected everything because Wisconsin. Yeah, they canceled the games against Purdue, Nebraska, and hopefully they play Michigan this weekend, but who knows? So, I mean, it's all up in the air at this point.
Yeah, but I do. But another thing is, Maryland lost 43-3 to Northwestern at the start of the season. And then all of a sudden, Talia Tagovailoa comes alive and he threw 3 picks against Northwestern. And now he's got, after the Penn State game and the Minnesota game, where they put up over 35 points, he now has 770 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 67% completion rate. So, like, I think Maryland found their quarterback. And now once you have a quarterback, it makes everything 10 times easier. And you see Maryland starting to win some games. That's a little strange.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, who would expect Maryland to, I mean, to go out and get their butts kicked by Northwestern and look like one of the worst team in the conference, and then they go and beat Penn State, who, by all means, Penn State's overrated, I believe, year in and year out. However, I still don't think they should be 0-3. That's ridiculous.
I thought Penn State wasn't as high as 8 when they started. But I definitely didn't expect them to go 0-3.
Yeah, same here. And that just shows that it's like, you know, maybe at the end of the day, they're going to go out and play the games. But, you know, obviously, it's an all Big Ten schedule. You don't have those first 2 or 3 games against lesser opponents.
Cupcakes.
So, cupcakes. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know.
And you also, I think this is a big factor. You also don't have the crowd involved.
Oh, God, yes. That is.
And to me, you're playing without fans. I think you feel it's like a scrimmage or a practice.
A spring game. It's like a spring game.
Yeah. But if you were to play in the SEC, the ACC, where you got 25% capacity, 30%, whatever it is, Notre Dame showed they wanted to be there because I think, A, they wanted to rebound and show they can play against the big boys, which, you know, they haven't played Clemson in like 5 years because they play half the ACC all the time. But they can always play at Boston College every year. I hate them. Their schedule, I hate them.
I think they after this year, don't worry. I think the ACC is going to finally say, like, look, we did you a favor this year. It's time that you come with us permanently. And I hope that does happen.
But anyway, back to the Notre Dame game. The crowd is into it, and the Notre Dame players are into it. Like, I don't see that in any game in the Big Ten. It just seems like,
yeah, we're no, here. We've talked about this on past episodes and stuff. College football is the biggest atmosphere in American sports when relying on the crowd and the band. Yes. And we don't have that in the Big Ten. So, exactly. I mean, who knows what would have happened, Michigan at Minnesota, with the full stadium. Maybe Michigan didn't win. Same thing with MSU Michigan. Who knows? You know? So,
I definitely think a Minnesota, if that's the exact way Minnesota Michigan started at Minnesota with a normal crowd, I don't think Michigan wins that game.
I mean, you're talking, yeah, exactly. Because prime time, ABC, you're going to have a packed stadium. It's Michigan, Minnesota.
You get a block punt.
Yeah, that block punt, you know, momentum goes one way or the other. The crowd affects it. Who knows? But, yeah, it's different when you see, like you said, SEC teams or Notre Dame, they have some fans in the band.
So much. They care so much. Like, it looks more – everyone's more enthused. And then I think Michigan's probably the biggest team where they don't look like they want to be there to begin with. And every – besides the first game, but the last two, even – at the start of the Michigan State game, they didn't look like they wanted to be there.
Your coach and don't look like he wants Indiana to be there either, but we'll say that for another time.
I think he's sleeping.
I don't know, but to get back to that point, to be honest, I don't understand why you can't allow, like, some fans in the Big Ten and the bands when other conferences are doing it safely. I'm not saying to have a packed stadium, but at least have 15 or 20% fans. I know cases are increasing, but... You know, I mean, come on, they don't even have the bands there. Central had the band at their game last week. So I know it's family only, but, like, come on, can we at least create some type of atmosphere? But they don't look like they're going to do that.
I mean, see, when, like, especially with a young team like Michigan, with such a young team, those younger teams feed off the energy from the crowd more than the veteran teams. Like, I don't know what a veteran team is, but yeah, you know exactly what I'm saying. The younger teams, they need, because, you know, they're not experienced. They need that extra push, and you get a roar from the crowd once, then whole game changes. And I can tell you, playing against a packed crowd is way different than playing in what they are playing in right now. It's, you feed off of it, and you just want to be there, and you just want to win 10 times more. The only dude I think that cares on Michigan has got to be Ronnie Bell. He made one. It was in the second quarter. It was their opening drive of the second half. Opening drive, he makes like a nice 30-yard catch, and he screams, absolutely screams at the top of his lungs saying, "Let's go." And that was like the only dude who cared. Like, Indiana, though, I will tell you, as a team, their coach, I think that entire team, they really cared. They're very enthusiastic, especially this season. But just other teams, it's just, let's just play. It's like they don't even want to be – like, it's basically you're just there to get
done. Yeah, I agree. And it's just another thing we're going to have to go through with this college football season. I mean, heck, look, Michigan-Ohio State, the big game, it's not Thanksgiving weekend. It's, what, 2 weeks after now. And, you know –
yeah, so Thanksgiving might be a little bit happy.
We're playing into December. So, again, don't take the season too seriously. Root for your team to win. But at the same time, you know, don't throw your TV out the window if your team loses either.
Yeah, speaking, I want to go back to your Central Michigan point. What's going on with the electricity situation up at Mount Pleasant? Did you guys not pay a bill?
So, I'm sitting here watching the game on last Wednesday against Ohio, and I believe there was about a minute to go in the first half.
Second.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just sitting here. I got the window open, which is great because I could basically not see the football field, but it's like probably half a mile away from me, if even that. So I can hear everything that happens from the stadium announcer to the refs to everything 10 seconds before it happens on my TV. So I can hear everything, which is kind of cool. So I'm sitting here. I got my window open, and all of a sudden, everything goes black. I mean, the whole campus went out. The stadium went out. And I'm just standing here like, what the actual blank? And, you know, everybody just starts talking and shouting out of windows. Screw Ohio. F Ohio. This is great. So, you know, I just went down the hallway, talked with some people, blah, 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 what happened. And, no, we got the power back on about, I think, an hour later. But the stadium had generators, so they were playing before us. But, man, that was crazy. The whole campus just went dark. I'm like, okay, this is interesting, and it sure was.
Hopefully that doesn't happen next time they play at Kelly Shorts.
And I'm just thinking, I'm like, all right, this is a hell of a coincidence for it to happen during the football game. I mean, I'm just saying, and who knows, but either way, get back to the game here. Huge game to start the season. Central's one of the favorites to win in the West, along with Toledo and Western. Although Central does kind of have the lead because they made it to the MAC championship game last year. But no, big win over Ohio. It was back and forth. Ohio is one of the better teams in the East, along with Buffalo. And the redshirt freshman, Daniel Richardson, came out. And it wasn't a perfect game, a great game, but for your first career start, it was good enough. Went 23 for 41, threw over 240 yards. I mean, it's only a six-game schedule, so who knows what the hell is going to happen. One loss could put you out of the MAC championship game, so they may have to win out. But to be honest, at this point, they got an easy game tomorrow. And, well, I don't want to say easy because they're never easy. But they're on the road tomorrow night against NIU, Northern Illinois. Kenny G. You know, we're going to pay him. Whatever, that's something for another time. But it should be a fairly simple, easy game tomorrow. Go on the road, do your business, get that win, and then the big game is next week, home against Western, which, if you're a CMU Western fan, which, in our family, you know, we know the importance of that rivalry, which is going to suck with no fans there and not traveling to one another's campus and all that, but hey, that's the big game. Whoever wins that may go to the MAC championship game, so I'm excited for that next week.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if a David Moore plays.
Yeah,
at all.
I mean, I don't know with that suspension issue and stuff. I know you know better than I do with that, with those things. I haven't looked too much into it, but hey, you got momentum. I know Richardson didn't play great, but he played pretty damn good. So just keep riding him, and we'll see where it takes us. You know.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan, though, on the fourth and short on Central's last game. I thought that was a dumb play call, just because when you go into Wildcat with a running back, everyone basically knows that. I know Ohio is probably going to bring that house no matter what, but if you have Richardson in there, you're going to be on your toes a little bit more because
yeah, they did go to the Wildcat a lot in that game. They did not to mention it.
And then you put that on the big fourth down, and now you're thinking, well, it's basically a run now. I thought he maybe should have gave it to Pimpleton off the edge, or
right
when he was in motion, and just gave it to him. But I hated that play call. That play call reminds me of the national championship game between USC and Texas with Vince Young and Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and – who was the USC running back, the number 21? Was it like
Laquan Treadwell?
Was that his last name? Yeah, that guy. So I was watching the Football Life, you know, the NFL Football Life, but it was just of that game, the Rose Bowl, or the national championship game. It wasn't the Rose Bowl. But so the Texas defense was like, that's the fourth down right about midfield. That Texas defense sitting there, and they go, Reggie Bush gets in, who knows what could happen. But then you put in the big bruiser who – their nickname between Treadwell and Reggie Bush was Lightning and Thunder, and Thunder was Treadwell. And Texas defense eyes light up when Treadwell's back there because, you know, they're running it. So they bring the house, and then they stop it, and then they score a touchdown the other way. That's what that play reminded me of a little bit, because you're running the ball. 9 times out of 10, you're running the ball, but there's a different
outcome. Yeah, and so there were definitely some questionable calls in that game, but I mean, I'm not gonna second guess McElwain. I know, as we were there for the MAC championship game last year with that fake punt, which I just, that was
dumb
stupid.
Call,
I mean, they were at their own, what, 30 on 25 or something.
I would say they punted a little bit.
Yeah, and something I didn't talk about yet, but I got to give credit to that O-line last week. I mean, that was just insane. They don't have much experience on that O-line. I know your family friend Danny Metalski, big 6'9" up front there, the right guard. He was tremendous in that game,
sir,
getting blocks for Kobe Lewis. I mean, that whole O-line held up great, getting blocks that whole game. And I know offensive linemen in general don't get enough credit, and that is true. But, man, that, I think they're one of the keys to winning that game, because it obviously ended so close. I do wish there were a couple opportunities on fourth down where they would have went for it instead of punting, because I believe that O-line, they would have got them there just how good they were blocking. I know they didn't get it at the end of the game, but regardless, that O-line deserves a hell of a lot of credit, especially with the inexperience they have up front. That game was tremendous, and let's just hope they can continue to do it onward.
Yeah, and for a lot of people that don't follow the MAC does produce quite a bit of NFL talent.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, look at the Sunday night game, Tampa Bay. We all know who's on that. No, but just besides Antonio Brown. don't get me started with that basket case, but
Khalil Mack.
Hell, Big Ben went to Buffalo? Miami of Ohio. I mean, I'll look into this some other time. Maybe you can do some research for me. But out of the group of five, you know, the lower five, not the power five, but the group of five conferences, which conference has the most players in the NFL or has had the most players in the NFL? I'm just curious. Maybe we can look into that another time. But the MAC do produce a lot of decent NFL talent.
I know J.J. Watt obviously was drafted out of Wisconsin, but he did start his career up at Mount Pleasant.
You know, a lot of decent NFL players have come out of not just Central, but the MAC as itself. And maybe it is an underrated group of five. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be honest. The average fan doesn't really care about the MAC. I mean, let's be honest about ourselves. But, you know, you got to look into it.
Yep, that's exactly. Stick around, because next time we come back, we're going to be talking about some Lions and how they're terrible and the new type. All right, everybody, we're back with more 100% Sports Podcast. We said we were going to talk a little bit about how the Lions sucked. And Nathan would agree pretty much with everything I just said right about there.
Yeah, and this past weekend definitely didn't do them any favors. I mean, God, giving up over 200 yards to Dalvin Cook, when specifically the game plan going into that game was to stop the run. That clearly didn't happen. This so-called rocket scientist who wears a poncho on the sideline, or whatever the hell he wears, I don't even know what that is. Man, I'm just sick and tired of it. I want him gone. I want Quinn gone. I want Stafford gone. I want this whole thing blown up. Just start over. And by blown up, I mean, how about this? Change the mascot. Change the logo. How about some new colors? Let's just start all over again. Now, obviously, none of this is going to happen, but this is in my imaginary world. Just start all over. Start new.
New stadium?
Yes, a new stadium, because let's be honest,
new facilities.
Ford Field is it's good atmosphere, but I mean, why do you build a dome?
It's cold.
Oh, yeah, sure, whatever. Football, that's the biggest thing I have with the NFL that pisses me off is, you know, a lot of the newer stadiums are obviously indoor. I just wish all football was played outside, but that's besides the point as I go on another rant here. No, the Lions, they've looked horrible. It's time to move on from all of them. Stafford, all these idiot fans out there talking about how, oh my God, he's so underrated and blah, 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 after he led them back after Atlanta's to beat Atlanta, I mean. And then he goes out in the next week, sucks against it. Well, doesn't suck. He didn't play well against Indianapolis. And then this past weekend, he sucked. And look, man, I wouldn't be surprised if he walks away at the end of the year. I mean, he looks fed up to me. I think he's had enough. And
back to your stadium point, I think a reason that a lot of stadiums are going back to indoors because you can add a lot more things and have a lot more events indoor arenas.
Yeah, it's all because of concerts and stuff like that. I mean, hell, we see at Ford Field, there's probably a concert every month there in the off season and stuff. And they do what else? I think they do
Monster Jam.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like, but, you know, gone are those old days. I mean, you know, if we had an owner who actually cared about a team, we wouldn't be here. And I don't know. I don't have an emotional connection with this team anymore. I mean, I get mad now when they win.
Emotional connection.
Yeah. I get mad when they win. I threw my remote when they came back and beat Atlanta because I just have a disdain for Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn that I just can't stand them. They're horrible. Get them out of here. And I hope they never get another job in their life again. That's just, oh, I hate them so much.
Harsh words.
That ain't harsh. They make millions of dollars. They got enough to live off of the rest of their life.
Yeah, but back to the stadium point that I wanted to bring up one more point, is that you can also host the Final Four.
Yeah.
And that draws a lot of money, even though I would never go to a Final Four game in my life.
Yeah, but they go to the same four or five cities, it seems like, the last 5 years.
I would only go to a Final Four game if I was, like, courtside or I was, like, 10 rows up. But those tickets cost quite a bit of change because you're in a football arena watching a basketball game. That doesn't seem any good.
I know, but, like, come on. It's the atmosphere. And, all right, let's say someone offers you a pair of free tickets, but you're sitting in the upper deck, all right, so you're high up. But it's Michigan in the Final Four. Come on.
So you're gonna be have binoculars while watching the basketball.
Yeah, but you gotta be there. I mean, just to go once to experience it. I mean, come on. Like, someone's offering tickets. Go.
And in the student section, you can't even watch the game. You gotta look at the jumbotron.
I understand,
the whole time.
But it's about the experience. It's not about just going to the game. It's about being up there for the weekend and going out to the bars and partying and having fun. Not that I condone any of that, but.
All I'm saying is I am not watching a Final Four game. Unless I'm like front row and 10 rows up. A Final Four game.
Then call me in 30 years when you're a top broadcaster on ESPN and you can get me tickets there. And then I'll go with you.
All right, I got you. But anyway, back to the Lions thing. So you know how we say Matt Patricia is a rocket scientist.
Yeah, he's something, all right.
And all these new things that they've been trying. Do you want to know what happened on that 70-yard Dalvin Cook touchdown run?
No, but I know you're going to tell me, so go ahead.
The Lions were experimenting with 10 men on the field.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, that's right. I remember that.
And they also, this is also not the first time they've given up a large run touchdown with 10 men on the field this year. It's happened on numerous occasions in multiple games that they lost. So Matt Patricia, I guess, really thought, what can I do to change up these offenses? I know. Let's put one less guy on the field.
This guy.
And see what happens.
This has happened repeatedly, and I know it's happened repeatedly, because 10 men on the field, I don't know what the F it is with this guy that he can't get his personnel out on the field, or he can't count to 10 or 11, whatever the hell it's supposed to be. Maybe he should take that damn pencil out of his ear and start tailing off players as they walk onto the field. I mean, come on, man. It's just,
Or you can be the Tennessee Titan coach, Vrabel, purposely put 12 men on the field. Did you see that at all, where he purposely put 10 men on the field so he could save 40 seconds of time?
He's one of the new, how do I say this? Not changing the game, but I know last year he took advantage of it with false starts or holding penalties or something. Like, you purposely hold the play.
So it stopped the clock, and then they let the other team score. I believe it was the Texans. Let the Texans score, and then they go around and those 40 seconds became crucial, scored the game-tying touchdown, won in overtime. By the way, did you know, this is probably going to piss you off even more, Matt Vrabel was it was either going to be Patricia or Vrabel.
Mm-hmm.
Vrabel was a top candidate for the Lions job back in 2018. You believe that's when he was hired?
Yep, and that's another. Now, no guarantee he would have came here would have succeeded, but definitely.
Yeah,
good.
But
so yeah.
It would have been better than what we're seeing right now, but I tell you that.
Oh, another former New England coach who's looking pretty decent is Brian Flores, the coach of the Dolphins. I mean, they're 5-3, and don't even get me started with the other piece they have out on the field that the Lions could have had. Some guy named Tua Tagovailoa. Not sure.
We have Jeff Okuda now. We have Okuda. He's insane.
Oh, God. Okuda has been terrible this year. I don't care. If you take a cornerback, number 3 overall, he is expected to come in and make a difference to the team right away. I'm sorry. That's just how it is. And he hasn't really done that so far. And then you go over and you look at Tua, and it's like, yeah, I know it's only been 2 games, but it looks like he's good. And Justin Herbert, who, let's be honest, I wasn't high on him. I didn't think he'd be that good. He looks really good so far. So all 3 quarterbacks look good so far. And the Lions had a chance to take 2 of them. And, they took a cornerback out of Ohio State.
The Ohio State. But anyway, you know – what the Lions could have done was, you don't trade Darius Slay, and now you don't have as much pressure on your rookie quarterback.
Oh, yeah. And nothing against Okuda at all, the players. It's the same thing with Hockenson. Nothing against him. It's the team that took him in the top 10. And
that's just dumb.
Exactly. And, you know, I feel bad because, let's be honest, it's probably going to, I don't want to say it's going to ruin his career, but I don't know. I give up at this point, man. I'm just so frustrated, and I don't get mad when they. I get mad when they win. I don't even get mad when they lose. I get mad when they win. I just want them to suck, because let's be honest, they had a number 3 overall pick last year, and you don't get the number 3 overall pick unless you are terrible, and they're not.
They're terrible. They're more than terrible.
Yeah, they are, but let's be honest, they're still gonna go 6-10, 7-9, and be stuck with the 10th or 11th, 12th overall pick, and. I don't know.
Sheila will keep Patricia and Quinn around another year, and then they'll be back down to number 3rd overall.
Yeah, where's
pick.
Sheila in all of this? Come on, she said she was going to be more involved, and really looks like she is, huh?
COVID.
Yeah, sure, whatever. Hi.
All right, last thing before we move on to the Fast 5. What do you think of the A.J. Hinch signing for the Tigers?
Really quick, I know we'll focus on this more as the baseball season nears closer, but I know people are mad because he was a cheater and this and that, but the way I look at it, look, the guy wins. He developed that team into a 100-loss team and a 100-win team. The young players, young pitchers. I think it's a perfect hire for them. In my mind, yeah, he was cheated. He cheated, but he owned up to it. He suffered the suspension. The players didn't, which I thought is absolutely BS still. And it's like, you know what? I think he's the perfect hire for this team. He shows he can develop players, young players, which is exactly what they need. I mean, with the young pitching core they have and Torkelson and Riley Green, who are 2 key pieces to their rebuild. But I think it's a good hire. And, you know, it brings a little optimism, I guess. It does look like there is a light at the end of the tunnel now, no longer just plain darkness.
Yeah, I saw a meme. Some people hate Trump. Some people hate Biden. Everybody hates Manfred.
God.
Just like the same meme I saw about 3 days ago, some people hate Trump, some people hate Biden. Everybody hates Ohio State.
Yeah, I hate all the commissioners except for Adam Silver. That's he's the only commissioner in my mind that does anything that benefits the fans, the players in the league. But we'll get to that some other time.
All right. Let's get back in. Let's get into the Fab 5 right before we go.
The Fab 5? We ain't talking Fab 5.
I said Fab 5. Fast 5. My bad. I was thinking of Michigan. My bad. Juwan just pulled another 5-star recruit. Very happy right now.
Hey, at least the basketball programs are looking good here. That's about all we got.
Yeah, 5 combined 5-stars between Michigan State and Michigan basketball. Even though it's probably going to be 4 anyway, but still, it's still cool to have. I think it's still cool to have 2 really good basketball programs in the state of Michigan.
Hey, you know what? I hope that they're both great at the same time. If you get that final game of the year to have always be Michigan State, which I kind of wish they would move that to keep being that, like they do, I think, with Duke and UNC. hey, that could be great for 2-3 years. Next 2 or 3 years, two great teams going at it. You know, screw the football side of it. Let's get to basketball.
Yeah, for real. All right, score prediction for Central Michigan versus Northern Illinois.
All right, Northern Illinois lost their first game to Buffalo, who's the best team in the East, 49-30. Central beat Ohio 30-28. I do think Central comes through in this game. I don't think they're going to score as much as Buffalo did. I'm going to go 34 for Central. The Huskies, I'll give them 3 touchdowns, 21. 34-21, CMU with the win. 2-0 going into the big rivalry game next week.
I'm going to see Central Michigan with, I think it's going to be a little bit closer, just because, you know, it's on the road a little bit. I know the atmosphere is not going to be there, but, you know, it's still, you're playing on the road in a college football environment, the travel, all that. And, of course, playing on a Wednesday, too. So I'm going to go with Central Michigan with the win with 27, and I'm going to go 21 with Northern Illinois.
All right, all right.
So a 2-0 start for the Chips. Fire up!
Sir, fire up.
Grade the Detroit Red Wings NHL draft.
Overall, I can't complain. I mean, they had so many picks in this draft. They picked up a lot of Swedes. Not going to go too in-depth now. I give it a solid B+. Hell, I may even give them an A-. You know, he did the best he could. And for the idiots out there saying Lucas Raymond, they shouldn't have taken him. Well, you're also the idiots that don't know any of these players, just like me. Let's be honest. None of us really know who all these players are. It's hockey. Nobody follows hockey unless you're a Canadian or you're an NHL analyst. So let's just settle down.
Or a Swede.
And trust Steve Eisen.
Or a Swede. Or a Swede or a Russian. Yeah. Like everybody knows who the NHL, or not the NHL, the NFL, the NBA prospects are because, you know,
college sports. Exactly.
Very advertised, but who knows what the OHL is, the KHL? I don't even know. Like, just put some random letters in front of the HL.
Exactly. And I'm a huge hockey guy, and I don't really – okay, I know what those leagues are, but let's be honest. I'm not going to follow some Swedish league Division II team. I ain't worried about it. Trust Steve Eisenman. He knows what the hell he's doing.
Who even knew who Mo Sider was?
I didn't know. I mean, I knew who he was by looking at it, but I didn't want that. I didn't know.
He's a beast now.
Oh, yeah,
okay?
He is a beast. That's looking like a real smart move, man. I'm telling you.
All the shocks on draft day. What is your early Super Bowl prediction for? Or actually, I don't know why I said four. What is your early Super Bowl prediction?
Oh, God. I still think Kansas City's coming out of the AFC. I think they're one of them. For a team to go back-to-back, I know it's hard, but I think they got it. I know Pittsburgh's 8-0.
Too much firepower.
Yeah, Kansas City, I mean, I'm going to go Kansas City to the AFC. Out of the NFC, it's a little tougher. There really isn't one team that's pulling away that I can think of. Seattle just got their butts whooped by Buffalo. You know, what the hell? I'm going to say Green Bay. Why not? Maybe Aaron Rodgers can get one more. But I'm not 100% certain on that. But we'll go with Green Bay. Why not? Green Bay and Kansas City. How about that? Super Bowl one rematch.
With Kansas City. I was going to go with Kansas City as well, but I think it's going to be a tough road for them to get back there. Of course, you know, they're probably going to have to play the Steelers, maybe even the Bills in the playoffs. And, of course, there's that added extra team in the playoffs this year as well. So I'm going to go. I was not even lying. Before you said the Packers, I was thinking the Packers. But I know it was a bad game last week. I think I'm going to go see.
Yeah, I mean,
I think Russell Wilson's the MVP. He's been playing great. I know he didn't play great last time, but I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I can't argue with you. I mean, it's the NFC is kind of a toss-up. So, yeah.
The best NFL career for a player to come out of the MAC.
Well, I know you're more in-depth on this stuff than I am, but I still got to go with AB, Antonio Brown. I know the last couple of years have not exactly been good for him. But, I mean, if you look at him in his prime, the numbers he's putting up, I mean, he's still a Hall of Famer regardless. He's the best wide receiver in the year for 3 or 4 years in my mind. I still got to go with AB, Antonio Brown.
I'm going to go with Big
Ben. Ooh, okay.
I mean, won a ring. Something Antonio Brown didn't do. Both of them played with each other. But, I mean, he's still playing. He's still around. He's still doing great. I'm gonna go with Big Ben for the best career out of the MAC. Last question. We've seen the Patriots struggles. Now they limped to 3-5 yesterday after nearly losing to the 0-9 Jets, which is awesome because we need the Jets to go 0-16 for them to join the 0-16 club. Did Tom Brady do more for the Patriots dynasty than Bill Belichick?
I still think no. I know that people are going to get mad at me for that, but I don't care. Look, Tom Brady's still a good quarterback. He is not great anymore. People need to get that out of their heads. He's not a top five quarterback anymore. I wouldn't even put him – I don't even know if I'd put him in top 10, to be honest with you. He's still good, which he made that team last year, which was average, good team. They made the playoffs, but they lost. I still think Belichick is the key to all that. I know they suck this year, but something tells me that he has something up his sleeve and may draft a quarterback out of, I believe it's Trey Lance, or maybe even Zach Wilson out of BYU. Just watch it. Who knows? Maybe they go 2-14 and get Justin Fields.
3-13.
No, aren't they 2-6 now?
No, they won.
Oh, that's right. They won. They beat the Jets. So 3-13. Who knows? Either way, I hope they don't get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields.
I don't think this year is a fair thing to say about Bill Belichick, just because, you know, this team is not that good. Defense, I mean, the elite defenses they had in the past, which, of course, Matt Patricia coached. And just, I think Tom Brady definitely would have helped this year, just because the intensity that he brings day in, day out. So I'm going to say right now it's too early.
All right, yep, fair enough. And I agree. I think if Tom Brady was still there, they'd still be an 8-9-7 team. But I don't know. All I know is I kind of wish Belichick would just retire and we could just say goodbye to the Patriots. And I also kind of wish Brady would retire because I hate seeing him win. And I was happy when he got his ass kicked the other night. So, yeah.
All right. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that fun stuff. Nathan, like to add anything else
before we go? Nope, that's all we got.
All right.